Thanks for downloading and listening to our podcast. I know you know this, but this is a football fans podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net. Knock knock, who's there? Brendan. Brendan who? See, you've forgotten him already. So, if you want to pick up on the Brendan chat or commemorate the 25th anniversary of Fergus, go onto the website, you'll pick up the podcasts. We are now on to regular business. So we have Neil Lennon in press conference prior to the Aberdeen game, and then we have an excellent interview with St Anthony and Yogi Hughes talking about his feelings for Jock Stein and Sean Fallon, which are interesting. And at the end of that, it's 21 years since A Tune for a Day was released by Supernaturals, and that's the music that plays us out.
Before we get to that, I can ask you one serious question before we get things going. Just as someone who's had to experience the other side that Glasgow can bring, this life can bring, what do you make of what happened to Brendan in midweek and his family?
That's horrendous, you know, and no matter what walk of life you come from, to have your house burgled in the middle of the night, it's a horrific experience. However, the club, and I've been in touch with Brendan and Charlotte, and, you know, we're here to help them in any aspect that we can, just to, you know, help them through what's been a difficult few days for them. But it shouldn't detract, you know, the whole picture from Brendan's time here, and, you know, I know from their own experience, the personal experience, that they've loved their time here.
In terms of the present day and yourself, how are the feelings about walking out at Celtic Park as manager again? Nerves? Excitement?
Yeah, a bit of both, yeah. Obviously, it's settled down a little bit now. We've had a, you know, nice week, you know, more time with the players, obviously on the training ground, so just the most important facet is the players are okay and ready to go again for what's going to be another difficult game.
Would it be special to walk out as manager again? You've done it so many times, because perhaps you thought it wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, it's a privilege, you know, my privilege, and it means a lot to me, so I'm looking forward to the moment. But once the moment's passed, then full focus will be on the game.
What does a win do in this game against Aberdeen? Does that put them out of the equation?
Possibly, yeah. I don't know if they'll have one eye on Tuesday as well, but knowing Derek, you know, he's a brilliant manager and he'll have something up his sleeve for us, I'm sure. But again, you know, we've done a lot of work on Aberdeen and how they play against us in previous games and what we have to do to overcome what will be, you know, a difficult hurdle. But if we win, then it's just ticking off another game and going forward.
Neil, you're back and you've had that bit of time to get a look under the bonnet of things here at Celtic. How does the squad compare, would you say, to when your last year?
I haven't really had, never really given it much thought about making comparisons, but you know what these players have achieved, 7 trophies out of 7, and it's perfect. You want to maintain that. It's difficult, you know, different times, you know, different training regimes. So I haven't really given it much thought. You know, we had some really good players in my time, and you know, this group are excellent as well. So it's, and obviously there's denominators there between both the squads, the likes of Brownie and James and Mika and a few others. So yeah, pretty similar, but the personality of the group is very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of whirlwind when you came in through the door, obviously two massive matches that you had to get in. What's the past week been like? Been a bit more settled?
Yeah, a bit more settled, yeah. You know, and don't have far to travel for training either, which is a big bonus from here to Edinburgh. And I'm enjoying it, sort of like getting used to the way things are run now and getting used to the training side of things and the organisation side of things. And I'm loving it. I'm really enjoying it.
Is it a big change, or in some ways do you feel like you've never been away?
A bit of both. You know, I know it sounds like a contradiction, but there are aspects, there's so many staff here that I've known from the last time. But obviously the setup and, you know, some of the facilities here are a little bit different. But ultimately the common goal is to get the team ready for the weekend, and you know, we've been able to do that. I think they're looking forward to the game. They trained well this week and they're ready to go.
You're only at the moment here until the end of the season. How does that work in terms of players who are coming to the end of the contract? Look at Scott Sinclair and Mika Lustig, for example. They've got clauses that can be triggered for an extra year, but how does that work in terms of you? Do you have a say in that?
Oh yeah, I mean, meeting with Peter on Wednesday and meeting with Lee, you know, about recruitment going forward. So it's just business as usual, club business, you know, and I'm part of that.
on Scott Sinclair, that extended contract? You think that's, you're going to trigger that? Are you hoping to trigger that before?
Well, we'll let you know in due time. But again, he's having a very good season, you know, and he's been a really important player for the club over the last, well, since his time here. And, you know, he's going to be important for me in the running now.
And actually also, Lee Griffiths, he, you know, sort of hinted on social media, could be
really?
Looking back for a return. Have you managed to have a couple of chats with him?
Not yet. Just a few text messages. Obviously, when I got the job, he was congratulating me, and we've been sort of keeping on top of things with him. And again, the club have done all they can with him in terms of getting him the right sort of support. So hopefully we'll see him sooner rather than later.
You have no timescale on that?
No, not at the minute, no.
Is there any good news this week in terms of players coming back to fitness?
No, it'll be as you were, really, Ronnie. Dedrick, you know, obviously he was carrying a little bit of a niggle, but he's all right. And Near Beaton had a little bit of inflammation behind the knee, but he's okay as well. In terms of for Dundee, the week after, then we're hoping maybe one or two will be ready for that.
Roderick, what's he back to? Training now,
he's not training though. He'll hopefully be on the grass next week, as McGregor will as well, hopefully.
Ralston, Benkovic, and Cham, are they still working their way back?
Working their way back, yeah, still rehabbing at the minute.
Marvin Compo trained today. Could he play a part for you between now and then?
Yeah, he could, yeah. Yeah, played a development game on Tuesday, I went to see it, and his attitude was excellent. Scott Allen played in that, and Bayo. I was really pleased with what I saw from the senior boys as well as the younger players as well. So at the minute, with the squad being stretched for injuries, you know, it's good to have bodies, and those guys are getting a little bit of match fitness from that as well.
Have you said to him about maybe coming back, Marvin, because obviously he's not played a lot since he's been here? Have you spoke to him and said there's a chance I could meet you before the end of the season?
Yeah, he's training with the first team squad, and obviously keeping himself ticking over with match fitness from the development team. So if called upon, he'll be ready anyway, fitness wise.
To show you the depth of the squad that this has, you know, you look at the length of injuries, but you're still managing to, as you say, the big games last week, you're still managing to field the team that is capable of being more sizable.
I think it's the quality, you know, not just the depth, I think it's the quality of the player, you know, in a number of positions, and the strength of character these players have as well. You know, it's pleased me more than anything else, really.
Manchester United penalty, do you know, are you comfortable with what constitutes a penalty these days?
It's still a grey area for me, but when you look at it, did he make his body bigger? You know, I think that's one aspect of the handball he did. So I think the correct decision within the laws of the game was made. And again, when we're using VAR, it's a tool for the referee to make that decision. Now it's down to the referee's interpretation of that and how he sees it. So in his eyes, it was a handball, and I could see why you'd given it.
Is that a good example of why VAR works?
Absolutely. And then there was one the same night, Roma Porto, when the guy's pulled Florenzi, he's pulled back the attacker, and it's a clear penalty, and VAR brought that in, and the referee missed it, obviously, which is the easy thing to do from the angle he was at, but the VAR proved that it was a clear penalty. So, you know, maybe we'll get a little bit less cheating going on in the game going forward, and players will have to think twice about it now.
Sorry.
No, there's just some, you know, still it's not ideal, and in some countries there's different interpretations of it. You know, if you look at the World Cup final, the handball against Perisic, a lot of people would have maintained that wasn't a deliberate handball. You know, I didn't agree with that decision, but it's there for the referee, and he's made that call at the end of it. So it's not VAR decision, it's VAR showing the referee from different angles, and he makes that decision then. So ultimately, again, it's down to the referee.
You look forward to it coming to Scottish football?
Yeah, I think when we had the meeting there a couple of months ago, all the managers and the referees, everyone was unanimous and, you know, bringing it into the game. But it's obviously, there's going to be a cost there, and then how we use it, how we interpret it into the game here. Because, like I said, in different countries use it in different ways.
Talking about the Champions League, Neil, how much of an inspiration should the Ajax result be for a club like Celtic?
Well, I mean, it's magnificent, but they have spent a bit of money. You know, Tadic has gone in there for about 15, 18 million pounds. So, you know, maybe the wage bill is around what we have, but, you know, they've definitely improved financially. But it's fantastic, and it should be a great inspiration for clubs like us.
Does it show the reaction by a lot of fans off the back of that is, well, from Celtic fans, why aren't we doing that? Why aren't we doing that? Is it
too simple just to look at it and say, well, they've spent that, it's similar, we should be able to do it? Is there more to break into it then?
Well, you know, it takes a bit of time to build teams for that level. It took me 3 years to really build a good team to compete at a good level and get through the group. So, you know, this team, with a few more additions, I think would be capable of competing at that level again, at a good level, you know. But, you know, congratulations to Ajax. Wonderful performance. Wasn't over enamoured with Real Madrid's performance. You know, looked like there's a lot of problems there behind the scenes, but Ajax took full advantage of that.
Can I ask you one quick question about a guy who signed in your first spell here, Timo Pukki, scoring goals for fun for a Norwich side. Just what you make of his transformation? He says one of the reasons he struggled at first because he was lazy at first in his career. He's improved since then.
That's honest of him. You know, I liked him. He was a good pro. He found it difficult, you know, at times with the demands here. He went away, you know, he's had a good time with it in Bromby, but he's really burst onto the scene and again back to prominence this season with Norwich, and he's having a fabulous season. He's been, well, one of the players of the season in the Championship. So we always knew there was a player there, but you know what Glasgow can be like sometimes. It's a difficult place to, you know, prosper, and he's gone away and, you know, he's come back a better player, obviously, and good luck to him.
Scotland call-ups will be coming soon.
I know.
What's your thoughts towards that? Because obviously there'll be a lot of Celtic players involved. That's what they'll be.
Depends how fit they are. You know, they will go and get assessed. But, you know, some of our staff work with Alec anyway, so there's no issue there for me. And some of them might actually need a game, which would be great for both the player and the youth country.
Christian McGregor,
I doubt Christie will. You know, McGregor, hopefully.
This is another Celtic Underground podcast. I've got a very special guest today. Somebody who is a Celtic legend from his time in the 1960s and early 70s. It's Yogi Bear himself, John Hughes. So, pleased to meet you, John.
All right, Stephen.
The first thing we always ask is, what was your first Celtic game you saw as a boy, and who was your first Celtic hero?
I didn't have any, because my father really didn't take me to football. I was a runner when I was younger, and I signed for Celtic straight from school. My father came from Bayleson, and Jimmy Gribbin was about at the time. You remember Jimmy Gribbin?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was Jimmy that signed me for Celtic, so I didn't really have Celtic heroes.
So you never had any connections to the club in that respect?
No, it was a weird one. I just went straight from school.
And you were very, very young when you started playing for Celtic. You were 17?
I was training at Parkhead by the time I was 14. And I trained Tuesday and Thursday for years, you know, when they had no lights at Parkhead.
Mm-hmm.
And when John Jack, you remember John Jack?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the goalkeeper's name? Dick Beattie.
Mm-hmm.
John Jack and Dick Beattie used to come in and put their tracksuits on over their clothes and jog round to the, you know, Wally Johnson used to stand outside. They used to jog over the jungle and jump into the jungle and sit in there and smoke. And they would shout last lap and they would jump out and...
Kid wouldn't have done it all?
Aye, hadn't done a thing. That was how bad it was then. Frank Connor was another one. I used to get him in the bus. Frank used to tell me how good he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only a boy. Okay. I was only 14. He's a man. Mm-hmm. Talking to me and I didn't know what to say, you know what I mean? But... all good memories.
And what about how did you find Jimmy McGrory as a manager? Because you caught the latter stages of Jimmy's reign at Celtic.
Jimmy McGrory was the loveliest man in the world, but he was never a manager.
No.
He didn't really know anything about football. Didn't know anything about tactics, and, you know, but he was a lovely man, and Sean Fallon treated him terribly.
Sean,
I see people think Sean is a lovely guy. I wrote wrote a couple of wee things about Sean in my book, and his family didn't like it. But I could have written a lot more.
But was he undermining Jimmy?
Aye. Yes, without a doubt. And Sean also hated Big Joke. Hated him. But when he came to Park here, he was crawled to him. But anyway.
And what about Robert Kelly at the time? Because obviously the feeling amongst in later years was that Jimmy wasn't really the manager, that he was being undermined by Robert Kelly, and was he the most powerful guy at that
point? Robert Kelly was the boss. He was the boss. I mean, I never saw him interfering with Jimmy. But he never really, he just let Jimmy go on with it. He never really, it was only in very important things that Bob
got involved in, and
you eventually got to know that he was a man.
Did you have any dealings with Kelly through the years?
Well, I was one of the Kelly kids. You heard the Kelly kids?
Oh, aye.
Well, I was one of them, so he liked me, you know. I never had any problems with him. I was 17, there was a big raw boy for Coke Bridge, and I threw it in the first team. Sean was the coach, supposed to be. I didn't know what coaching was.
And what about when there was a lot of disappointments back then? I mean, it must have been really hard for you as a young boy to. It must have been hard for you as a young boy to the disappointment of the 61 Cup final, for example, in the replay, after the first game when you might have won it.
I, Steve, was disappointed, but it's hard to say because he didn't know anything else. I was safe at school. See, I didn't understand what Celtic Rangers meant because I'd never been to work.
Yeah.
I never had a job where I had to go in and people would say, I didn't know any of that. I was just a big boy, a big old boy. And it was disappointing. Sure, any game, you know, when you lose, it's disappointing. But I didn't know enough. I was really sort of immature.
So there was other disappointments as well in that period. There was the 63 Cup final replay against Rangers. There was the 64 MTK, where we had the 3-0 lead, get into Hungary, and we get beat 4-0.
But you see, that was a Bob Kelly. We went over there and we were winning 3-0, you know. We bloody beat them over there, we'll beat them over here and all. That's stupidity, you know. We lost 4-0. And that was really just, I mean, Celtic, we could have been a European Cup final way back then. Before MD talked about Europe. So it just shows you that was a big disappointment. But these things happen in football, you know. And we didn't have any experience of European football, really.
No.
You know, and Bob Kelly was that kind of man who would say, we'll beat them there, we'll beat them over here and all, you know. Silly stuff, but that's the way they were. And that's the way Celtic was at the time. And, you know, when you think about we could have been a European Cup final in 1963, it's really disappointing, you know.
So, but when in 65 and Jock Steen returned, what was your feeling at the time then?
Well, he'd spoken to me before. I wanted away because Sean wasn't playing me. You know, I mean, I scored, not till I did my book did I realise it, but I scored 88 goals in my first four seasons.
Yeah.
And Sean was dropping me. Wasn't playing me. I wasn't playing all the time.
So why was he dropping you? Was it a personal thing or was it just that you wanted to try something else?
No, he didn't. I don't know. You need to ask him. I don't know. He never told me why he dropped me. So I wasn't playing all the time. I still scored 88 goals. And I was one away. And I'd asked away. And Big Joke, we were over at a game at Hampden before Big Joke came, and he says to me, come here. He said, here, you're looking to get away. I says, aye, why? He says, well, don't do anything in a minute. I says, what do you mean by that? He says, just sit tight for a wee while.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. So I had an idea he was coming.
He was coming. Mm-hmm. Aye. And what were your feeling? I mean, Jock come back, were you excited at about the future?
I don't. It's that long ago, Stephen. I was excited because somebody else was taking over for Sean Fallon, and Sean Fallon obviously didn't fancy me as a player, and you know, I was pleased about that, and obviously, you know, the rest is history, as I say.
Well, did you see an immediate difference when Steen took over in terms of the way things were done? But training and preparation and stuff.
Aye. And how he played, and you know, I mean, he immediately changed me from centre forward to outside left. You know.
Now that was one of the questions I was wanting to ask you, John. You were stymied, you were very effective in both roles. Did you have a preference for where you wanted to play? Or were you just happy to get again?
I didn't mind where I played. I mean, I scored a lot of goals at centre forward. But he felt that because of my running power, it'd be better getting the ball on the half turn, you know. And I believed that. I think I had a decent career. So there was a big difference when he came, obviously. You don't need me to tell you, because he had a knowledge of the game and he was better with people. It was a bit like, you know, it made you want to play for him, the bastard.
So, I want to tell you about swearing. I'm going out.
So the thing about Jock Steen is, he had immediate success. You got the cup final against Dunfermline, and you were at centre that day. I think you were playing through the middle, and I just wonder, like, did you get the feeling when you won that you were on the verge of something big?
Not really. It just, you know, it just sort of crept up on you, you know, and when I think back on it, really, I didn't really think we were going to do all that well. But obviously, just, you know, you started getting results, and results breed confidence, you know, and anybody will tell you that, anybody in football, you know, once you start winning, you get used to it, and you don't want to lose it, and then people talk about tactics. We never played any tactics. We played 4-2-4.
We trusted the players, didn't he? He knew you were good players.
Well, he used to say that to us, you know, we're playing this team and they've got this and they've got that, but they'll be more worried about us than we are about them. You know. Because you realise we had good players, you know. I mean, Jimmy in one wing and me in the other, and then up the middle you had Lennox Chalmers and, you know,
Joe McBride and people like that.
Joe McBride was fantastic, you know. He was just unfortunate he got a bad injury.
That's right.
And then when Wispy came, you know, but Wispy, Big Joke signed Wispy, and Wispy came and he had a bad spell. He hadn't scored for 22 games or something.
At Hearts?
No,
it's Celtic. Celtic, all right.
And he was saying to her, you should have dropped me. Well, he didn't. He wasn't feeling confident. He felt that he was playing him because he sent it, which he was.
Aye. And he went in. Justify his signing.
Aye. And he went in and says to him, boss, look, you're going to drop me. He says, yeah, you can fuck. He says, I'll decide when I drop you. And he didn't drop him and he played through it. But that's what he was like.
The interesting thing about that, everybody thinks the turning point was the Dunfermline Cup final, but the people I talked to say it was the Rangers League Cup final where you scored two penalties. Because up to that point Rangers was almost like a hoodoo.
Aye, we'd never beat the Rangers.
And of course, like the people who talk about that game, that the first thing they mention is that Ian Young did Willie Johnson early on, as if to send a message out that we're not mucking about here anymore, we're serious now. And up to that point, I think that took Rangers by surprise. But I mean, from your point of view, you get two penalties that day. What was going through your head with two penalties in a cup final?
My wife at the time, not Teresa, I said to her before I left in the morning, she said, we don't get any penalties.
Really?
Well, it's a big thing. the prop fan like I'm down against Rangers, you know.
Over 100,000 there,
aye.
You know. It's
aye.
Mm.
And
but you sank the two of them.
Aye, well, you see, I always put my penalties to the goalkeeper's right, sort of halfway up.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you hit the ball high, when the goalie dives, he's on his way down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you hit him low, he's got a chance. But if you hit him halfway up, when he dives, he's on his way down. Never missed a penalty that year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. And Greg went over and told Billy Ritchie where I was putting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I changed it and I put it to the other side.
I think that's the one you sent him the wrong way, wasn't it? Aye.
Because he was already going that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one I put it where I normally put it, and he got his hand to it, but anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I was delighted with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right, I think that could have been the real turning point, because getting to the cup final and beating them in the cup final,
mm-hmm.
you know, makes a big difference.
It's a psychological
difference.
Thing.
Psychological.
As much to them as it is to us, because I think after that they thought, oh well, we're in trouble here, because this team are good.
Well, we didn't lose very much to Rangers, I don't think, in our time. We beat them all the time, but, you know, and this Rangers team now, you know, I've seen them play, I watched them against Aberdeen, they're fucking rotten.
Mm.
You know, they think they're great.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think Celtic in the 1-1 game, 1-0 game, Celtic were really poor.
Aye.
I've never seen them as bad.
No.
I mean, they just, in these games you've got to go out and get into it and mm-hmm, get yourself mm-hmm. up right away. And mm-hmm. Celtic were now slow and never get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And still, we're unlucky. They should still have got a draw.
Aye,
the goal we scored wasn't offside.
So, moving on to the Lisbon season then, you know, Jock Stein's team are getting into full swing. And there was disappointment for you because you played in the League Cup final, with the beat Rangers again. And you've played in a lot of the European games. In fact, I've got it down here that the 10 days before Lisbon, you were a substitute against Killy. So you're on the verge of it. So when did you realise that? I've heard people say that you had an injury before Lisbon. Is that true?
I wasn't fit. I don't think I'd been playing anyway. Don't get me wrong, Stephen. I don't think I would have played. But I got an ankle injury and it poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
And we dogged for some reason. We're not going to take me to Lisbon because of height, the flying. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I said, come on. You know, you need to take me. So they took me out, but I was all bandaged up. I was rooming with John Cush. So we got to Lizard, got to the hotel. And I says to Cush, oh, man, you need to go and get the dog. My ankle's killing me. And while I was away, I took the bandage off and the poison was shooting up 6 feet in the air. Well, it's a pressure.
I was in the aeroplane.
So I obviously wasn't out of my room at Lisbon.
No.
And, you know, people say about Lisbon, very disappointing time for me.
Mm-hmm.
First, because I missed the game. And secondly, because if you're not involved, it's not the same.
I know.
Doesn't matter, you know, any player will tell you that.
Charlie Gallagher actually taught me that as well, John. He said he was delighted to see the boys winning. He says, but as a professional, there's something inside it and you're hurting that you're not out on the pitch.
Aye, without a doubt. You know.
So did you watch? Did you get to the final in England?
I was there. And they won easy.
Mm-hmm.
But
and looking back at it now, do you think if you had a chance that day, that you could the attack that we did, the opportunities must have been something else if you had played?
It's all hypothetical, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, the boys did very well. And they won the game well. Who knows what would have happened? But that's one of the big regrets in my life. But
because the one thing that I think the supporters that when we talk about the Lisbon Lions, for me it's not just the 11 guys. It's Joe McBride who was desperate on lucky injury. Yourself who had the injury. Charlie's corner kick against Foz Vendina. Yeah. John Fallon was a substitute in every game. And you know, he didn't play, but he was part of the squad. So I think it's important that we remember it just wasn't 11 men on the day, and there was also Neely Malkin and Jimmy Steele and Bob Rooney behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, without any one of them, it might not have the same chemistry.
I know what you mean. It's a fantastic achievement because it'll never happen again.
No,
I mean, money's just taken over now, and you know, they'll never ever get close to it again. And that's the one thing I was saying, you know, about Lenny being back. At least he's taken us through the quarterfinals. Brendan Rodgers never done that.
No, that's true.
He was, that was a big...
No, we'll go into that at the end, because we'll talk about the current stuff at the end, but they've been in the European Cup led us to the World Championship, right, and you do three games against Racing Club, right? Now, I don't know where to start here, but I think we should start by saying that we won the League Cup final, and you had a terrific game, you scored two goals, so confidence is high, and hopefully at that point you'd have been thinking to yourself, well, if I missed out in Lisbon, I'm going to make up for it here. And the games must have been really disappointing.
They were disappointing because they were so dirty, you know. I mean, we should have realised that Hampden was spitting on us and kicking. It was terrible, you know. And we were all, they were just... It's hard to describe. I've never played in games like that before. People spitting on you, you know. You don't know...
Horrible stuff, isn't it?
And you feel like, you know... And eventually I did. I lost the place.
Because you get sent off, don't you?
Uh-huh. Get sent off. And I'd never seen it. And I had a pub out in Kandurra a few years ago, and somebody played it up on the screen. When I saw it, I was like, oh, fuck.
I don't think you would have got sent off any other time in your career. You weren't that kind of player.
No.
And what did you get sent off for? Can you remember? What did you do?
I punched him, and I kicked him on the way down. So,
and even Bobby Lennox got sent off, which was a liberty because he was the nicest wee guy.
Me Jimmy got sent off, didn't he? But it was shocking, and Ronnie Simmons got out with a coin.
That's right.
Now, if you look at where the stadium was and all the stuff behind the goals, big barriers, and it was all thin wire like that.
Mesh.
There's no way anybody could have thrown a coin there with enough force to get through the mesh and just over the bar and hit Ronnie. It wasn't possible. It was one of the photographers behind the walls, you're sure? I think so. Well, as I'm saying, Stephen, to try and throw a coin for that distance, I mean, it was a part, it wasn't close to the, you know, the track.
Yeah.
It was set back and we were sitting there. I didn't play in the second game. They were peeing on us through the concrete and
above the stand.
Terrible atmosphere.
So what was Jock Stein's reaction then after the games to you know, was a
well, Bob Kelly wanted to come home after the second game. But Jock wouldn't hear it. He wanted to win it. You know.
How did you feel as players?
I'd have come home. I don't know how the other boys felt, but you know, was it worth getting treated over the two games at Glasgow and over there? It's terrible. And as I said, Bob Kelly wanted to come home, but Big Joe wouldn't do it.
So moving on for that. You were known for scoring some spectacular goals. Now when I was a boy, Matt, you were one of my dad's favourite players, you and Bobby Murdoch.
Aye.
And there was three goals I'm going to mention, and that you might remember that he used to tell me about. One of them I saw on TV, but the other two I don't think were really televised. The first one was at Dens Park one day in the League Cup, where you ran across the park and you swivelled and you cracked a ball right in the top corner for 30 yards.
I scored a few at Dens Park because I used to play against Alec Hamilton.
He was a good back, wasn't he?
I used to roast him. You know.
I
remember that goal. It was kicking down the hill.
That's right,
Hammy used to say, my own big man, run me, I'm too quick for you. And I just fucking used to run by him, you know what I mean? I talked all the time, Hammy, but I used to roast him.
So the other goal was a muddy day at Capello in 64. A similar type goal, you know, like it's a horrible, I mean, greener to the best of times.
I remember that as well.
And then the third one was against Rangers on a horrible wet day, 64, that you dribbled along a byline. You were losing your feet, but you managed to keep your feet. And as everybody else is falling, you lashed it into the net. So that was the three goals that my dad used to tell me about.
I don't particularly remember that 3-1
3-1 game. Apparently, Billy got injured and John Cousley was at centre half.
Oh, aye. Because he put Forrest in his place, because Forrest was used to give Big Billy a hard time because he was quick.
That's right.
And Big Cous nailed him.
So the way it was reported at the time, as my dad said, was that was an unusual result, because this is before Jock Stein. And for Celtic winning 3-1 was a big shock that day, and it was good stuff. So, as I say, we're known for scoring spectacular goals at times as well. So we're talking about some of the grounds there. There was a myth that us younger guys were brought up with, that you liked heavy going and you didn't like hard surfaces. Is it a myth?
Well, because, you know, people...
You must have heard that before.
Oh, I've heard it before. People used to say I was inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with Big Joe, if you were inconsistent, you wouldn't be playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wouldn't tolerate that. And if I was inconsistent and I wasn't this and I wasn't that, I'm the 7th highest goal scorer in Celtic's history.
Correct.
Stephen.
Yeah.
And don't forget, I left Celtic when I was 28.
And you had a few years left.
If I'd have stayed there, I was 32 or something, I would have scored over 200 goals.
Mm-hmm.
I've scored 190, I think it is. 189,
90. That's some going, considering that you were on occasions out in the when you weren't directly through the centre, but you made a score.
Big Joe was there, I was always, mostly, when we played Leeds, he played me at centre, because I could play against Jack Charlton as well, he was another one.
But what about the heavy surfaces?
Did
it suit you?
Well, the heavy surface, I was big and I was strong and I could run. So late on in the game, when people were tired, and I wasn't tired, that's how people would say it, you know. But yeah, it suited me. But it didn't mean to say other grounds didn't suit me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, against Aberdeen on the ice.
Mm-hmm. I've got that down here, because that was the day of the baseball books.
They were Big Billy's.
No, they always get described to me as baseball boots. They weren't baseball boots, they were Adidas trainers, which were, at that time, they were groundbreaking stuff.
Aye.
So,
but I think I was the first in Britain to wear flat shoes on the I should have paid in that, shouldn't I?
Mm. Did it help though? Oh, did you find an assistance?
What happens with a rubber studs? I felt as if I was up in stilts. I didn't feel, you know, once you get the feet flat on the ground, it helped me.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me.
Because that's a game you're renowned for. 5 goals you scored that day, and an 8-0 victory.
I know. Disappointed that Big Joe got rid of me, because I was a Celtic man, and I would like to have finished my career at Celtic.
Well, one of the games that you're noted for, probably the I would say that your most famous game. You mentioned that they're up against Jack Charlton. Celtic's won the first leg, they come back to Hampden, a European record attendance, 136,000. I mean, well, let's talk about that first. The atmosphere that night must have been
phenomenal.
Oh,
it was phenomenal.
The noise.
It was hard to describe what it was. And Bremer scored the first goal. He scored a cracker.
That was a good one.
It was a cracker. But we ended up beating them. We should have beaten them more.
Because there's good footage of that's around on YouTube, and I've actually seen the full 90 minutes, and you remember the old Celtic film shows back in the day?
Aye.
Well, that was one of the favourite ones. Always showed the Leeds game, and you know, I'm not just, you know, Bobby was great that night, and Bertie in midfield, but you did run him up with Jack Charlton that night. You had him beaten there, you had him beaten the run, you know.
I always played well against him, because I played against him in the Scottish League and the English League. But yeah, I didn't say. Didn't play again as often as I should have, because I used to turn down caps. I didn't.
Why?
Well, because at that time it wasn't the Scotland you were going to play; it was Rangers you were playing for. Mm. I mean, it was all Rangers, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know, you're going to game, you never saw anything else but Rangers scarves.
Aye.
Back in the day, I mean, they booed Jimmy.
That's a little busy, just Jimmy. Davy Hagar, I know. Occasions and you know other people.
Aye.
And there was that, because they wanted Willie Henderson in place of Jimmy, that was the thing. And I suppose with you as well, they would want Willie Johnson out in the left wing rather than yourself.
Aye. That's what it was, you know.
So get back to the Leeds game then. You know, like, did you feel you were on your game that night? It was one of the nights you feel I'm up for this.
Well, you were up for it anyway, you know. It was good when we used to get out to Seamill, stay overnight, and then used to go to bed in the afternoon. You know, a couple of hours kip.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were feeling good when you come up, you know, and the journey up in the bus, and it was, you know, the atmosphere was building, and then when you got near it, but, you know, okay, it was fabulous. And as I say, the noise was incredible. You think 136,000?
It's amazing, isn't it?
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have happened nowadays.
Well, that's a record I don't think will ever be beaten, because there's no stadium big enough.
No.
Nowhere near it.
And then they don't stand now, don't they? So, anyway.
What about the goal? What do you remember? Because it was a short corner, and Bertie whipped it in, and you managed just to get in front of Big Jackie. And
it was low.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in front of him and headed it. I remember it.
And then, of course, that leads us on to the final against Feyenoord. If there was, if you're recalled for the Leeds game as well, then if the team rather has hit the heights of Leeds, then to get to Feyenoord, who weren't very well known at the time. So yeah, the million-dollar question, and I bet you've been asked this dozens of times before, is what went wrong that night?
Well, he thought we'd won it.
Jock? And did that come across to the players?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. So the preparation would have been ideal, wouldn't it?
Well, the guy, what was his name? What was his centre forward's name?
The Dutch guy?
Aye.
Van Hanegem?
No.
Israel, Crane's Israel?
No, that was the centre half.
Right.
Van Hanegem was
the midfield player.
He was brilliant.
Mm.
And Big Joe was staging when he's slow, I mean, he sort of can't get back, for fuck's sake.
Mm.
He was brilliant. And they were much better than we assumed, because he gave us the report. But as far as we're here, I better not say that on tape. He didn't go and see them.
Mm-hmm.
He was away pursuing other things.
Other activities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was speaking to guys that I knew before, and they were saying, what do you think? I said, oh, 4 or 5.
God.
Now, what way is that to be approaching a game?
Especially a major final.
And you see, Feyenoord were just coming up at that time.
Mm.
That was one of their first wins. And we have not really seen them. He's reporting them, he's saying about players. He said the centre forward wasn't that quick. No, the guy was brilliant. Anyway.
So on the night that then we were into extra time, and you burst through and hit the post.
I don't remember if I hit the post. I remember I was through and I should have scored and I didn't. And I think that's why you get rid of me.
Something as simple as that, just missed a chance.
Mm-hmm. It's the only thing that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, Stephen, so, well, I can't think of anything else, but he's that kind of man.
So he ain't held a grudge in that respect?
Oh, I played at St Johnson,
and
Buck McCarry, just before half time, went over the ball, and I got 12 stitches there, right.
Help your son?
Right on the, you know, so I got docked 12 stitches half time. And after he'd done it, I was, he says to me, you're going out in the second half? I says, what? Surely you're kidding me on, boys. I said, if somebody touches that, I'll just burst. Because it was right on the front, you know.
In the bone.
Anyway, I didn't go out, and we could beat 3-2, and he blamed me for that. I held grudges, aye.
Mm-hmm.
Aye, no doubt about it.
Now, I've already asked you what position you preferred, whether it was outside left or inside. So what I was going to say is, we touched on the big crowds. Now, the Celtic Rangers games at that time at Hampden, especially, this was the era of the great crowd. You know, anything from 100,000 to 135,000. Again, just to get a flavour, what would that have been like?
Well, I mean, it was phenomenal playing in front of these crowds, you know. The noise was, you know, and then, of course, when you're Celtic and Rangers, it was always a big thing anyway, you know. So,
how did you like the games? Did you look forward to them, or were they a bit of a dread?
Well, once Big Joe came, they were better. Before he came,
we
hardly won, you know what I mean? We always seemed to be the better side, you know, we would be on top, and then they would break up apart and score. You know, you used to do that all the time, but once he came, we seemed to, as you say, it was up there, I think, and we very seldom lost to them.
So who would have been the fullbacks that you were up against then? Would it be Kai Hansen and...
Kai Hansen, Bobby Shearer.
Did you see, he was a hard man. Did you struggle with him?
Well, I struggled with him in the sense that he was wee, and he was built up brick shit house. You know, he used to dig me because I was big. But I found him hard to play against.
But you seem to have beaten a Johansson.
Aye, and because of that, the game we won 5-1 at Parkhead.
New year.
They switched Davy Proven to right back. Because he came in the door and he was running about doing this with a collar at me and all that. And I said, what are you? Anyway, we beat them 5-1, so it didn't make any difference.
And moving on, the you've already alluded to it there, the sadness of the departure in 71. So you and I were talking before the tape went on there. Because you made your debut so early at 17, there was a tendency to think you were older than what you were.
Yeah.
Now, when you left Celtic, you were still only 28, a lot left in the tank.
28, I was only... They say you reach your peak between 28 and 32.
Yeah.
I never even reached my peak at Celtic Park.
Your best years were
You know, really, and then people say, oh, I mean, Jostein was this and that, and I say, well, Jostein wasn't good for me, because he ended my career, virtually.
When it came to leaving, though, did he make it clear you weren't wanted anymore, or were you given a chance to stay?
Oh, no. Remember Ken Gallagher?
Aye, the Daily Record. Though.
Aye. Well, Ken was a pal of mine. He was a Rangers supporter, funnily enough, but once I signed for Crystal Palace, I'll tell you about that in a minute. Two or three days later, he phoned me. How you doing, big man? I says, fine. He says, what did you sign for Crystal Palace for? I says, what do you mean? He says, as far as I know, Everton and Sheffield Wednesday were after you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, knew nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in negotiating with the chairman.
At Palace?
And the manager, Bert Head. And the chairman was a guy called Waite. He was a house builder. And negotiating for money, and we'd been in for a while. Next thing, the door opens, bursts open, Big Joe, you, come here.
To you?
Aye. Outside. I get out, he said, you get in there and fucking sign, or I'll sit you in a stand for 9 months.
As brutal as that? So why do you think he wanted you? Did you ever get an inclination? No, did.
Well, I don't know, but he was obviously getting money off him.
And Bully went at the same time as well, so there was a two, maybe Palace wanted the twos or nannies.
I don't know. I don't know. Big goaties. So that was him. Didn't even give me the chance to go to his, because he would probably get a better bung. He was famous for that, wasn't he?
But did that go on then, John?
As far as I know.
So Crystal Palace were full of Scots players. You went down with Willie, and there was already guys down there, like McCormick was a captain.
John McCormick, Sam
Tony
Goodwin.
Queen,
Sam Goodwin.
Jerry Queen, Sam Goodwin, Tony Taylor. Did that make it easier for you down on Roger Hine would have been there as well, I think?
No, we were. Bear Head was hopeless. We played a man for man at the back, and they were a big Englishman there called Mel Blythe, and we played West Ham, and the other centre half was a big guy called Bobby Bell who came from Ipswich, and you know, him and Blythe were marking, and big Bobby slipped, left Blythe 2-for-1. Mm-hmm. And his man ran in the wing. He just ran with him, like a guy runs through and score. So I says to my, what are you fucking doing? My man didn't score.
the wee captain
at the time was a wee guy called Bobby Bell. I says to him, look, this can't go on. Mm-hmm. So we went to see Bertie Heddon, blah 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 blah. I can change it, but I don't want anything to do with it. It's a shambles.
He wasn't really managing then, was he?
Nah.
And did you enjoy playing in English football in general terms?
I didn't get a chance.
No,
Stephen. I mean, I only played about 4 or 5 months.
But you're fondly remembered down there for the 2 goals.
Oh, aye.
And there's a story about that with you were on for the goal of the season.
Aye. Well, I told you about that. Mm-hmm. Didn't I? That's, I believe he was on the panel. He's not going to sell me and then give me the goal of the season.
Just for the tape, Jock Stein was on the panel.
Yes, Jock Stein was on the panel.
And I
came second. And I firmly believe to this day that had he not been on the panel,
you'd have won it.
I'd have won it. As I say, it's common sense. He's just sold me.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to then turn around and give me the goal of the season in England, is he? Wouldn't make him look very good.
So for Crystal Palace, you went to Sunderland, and you and I were talking there 5 minutes ago, and you said that you got a bad injury for Crystal Palace. Sadly, that ended your career at quite a young age.
Oh, aye.
So the Sunderland thing didn't work, but obviously you had a brother called Billy.
Billy played for me.
Who won the Cup in 73, yeah, and what, yeah, I've always wondered was, were you at Wembley that day to cheer him on? Did you go to that game?
I think I was. I can't remember, it's that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I went to... what's his name? What was the manager's
Stokel.
Name?
Stokel. Bob Stokel.
Stokel wanted me to come with Sunderland to see if I could keep my eye on Billy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I wasn't there long enough.
Mm-hmm.
A shambles at the end. And as I say, that's my biggest regret. I left Celtic, I was 28, and I was still 28 because
mm-hmm.
I got an injury 4 months after it, and really never played again.
See, the funny thing about you leaving was that you were still in the first team at the time. I could see it maybe if you'd lost your place, and then people think, well, if you want to get away to play football regularly at your age, there isn't any point being in the stand. But not long before you left, like, you got brought down to Ibrox for Kenny Dalglish scoring the penalty for his first ever goal. And it's actually, it's a lovely ball through for Bobby Murdoch, and you went to dribble around a goalie, and somebody come crashed in behind you and sent you flying. So you're in the team at that point. It's really weird how you went from being in the team to just leave.
Stephen, I've no idea. I mean, I'm here now and I'm 76 in a couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know why I was like, why he got rid of me. I've no idea why he got rid of me.
No, I've done interviews with Charlie Gallagher and John Fallon, who are quite scathing in their criticism of Jock's man management. And as much as he could be quite a cruel man, and I think you experienced that side as well, didn't you?
Oh, aye. Well, we played Airdrie in the semi final of the cup. I think it was at Hampden, and I fell out with him. And I'd just built a house in Uddingston, and I had 3 kids at the time. I had 2 cars, and he never paid me a bonus between then and the end of the season. And my take-home pay, I think it was 1970, my take-home pay from Parkhead after tax was £33. People think, oh, come on, you're kidding.
It must have
on.
Been minted.
£50 less tax.
Uh-huh.
If you weren't getting bonuses, you had no money at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to live in that for 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it wasn't a nice man. what you can't, you know, you can't dispute what he did for Celtic. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But his treatment of individuals.
And yet he seems to be his favourites. But that, did you notice that much? Because the likes of Bobby Lennox and Bobby Murdoch maybe and Jinky seem to be his favourites, whereas you and Charlie and John Fallon and maybe a couple of other guys seem to have suffered.
Well, I don't know. I mean, just, he was that kind of man, you know, to, as I say, I keep repeating it. I mean, I was a Celtic man. I was 28. It's not as if I hadn't done anything for Celtic in my career. I mean, I was right up there at the top of the goal scorer list, and he get rid of me, and I thought, I'm thinking to myself, you know, my wife's saying to me, what have you done?
Nothing.
I don't know.
There's a story in your book I found quite interesting, the one about you get news of your wife. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Something in America.
What was that?
Mary, she was pregnant. And I was phoning home, you know, so I phoned to him, how are you doing, hen? How am I doing? You know, this, how do you think I'm doing? I says, you know, I said, well, I don't know, and look, I'm not phoning anything. I said, I'm just saying, how are you doing? And you don't know? I said, I don't know what. She's had a miscarriage. He didn't tell me.
That's awful. And then did you take him up on that? Did you say?
Why?
What was his excuse?
Oh, what could you do anyway? You're over here. It's done and dusted. What can you do? So that's what he's anyway.
And did you ever think, you know, like at your peak years, you know, when you were scoring all the goals, now, did you ever think of asking away because of the treatment you were getting for Joxton?
Well, the funny thing is, Stephen, he never really treated me bad. You know what I mean? I mean, I couldn't say to you for 2 or 3 years before I left that he was doing this and doing that and doing that. He didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in the team just before I left.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't. It's a weird situation. I don't know. I really don't know. You know, it's not as if. I was scoring goals regular in the team and. So it's still a mystery to me. I don't know what happened.
And in terms of the when you were playing well, did he give you praise? Could it be a bit hot and cold? Would he tell you when you had a good game and fill you full up?
He would do that. He would do that.
Was there no idea he dropped you as well like that? Was in your book that the taxi him thing? I don't know if it's you or somebody else, like you get a taxi home for Parkhead because when you found out you weren't playing.
Oh, I did that, it was me.
And then it went to Dundee and I think he was quite.
He then called me in. What he did, now you're saying, he called me into Parkhead for a reserve team game and then didn't play me. So I thought, fuck. I'm home, so I just got a taxi home. So the following Saturday we were playing at Dundee or something, and he called me in, put my name on the first team sheet and that, and I went away on the way up to Dundee. I wasn't playing, I wasn't subbing in. He just took me there for badness. I'd forgotten about that. But you know, really, as far as treatment's concerned, it wasn't very many times like that, you know. It wasn't as if I was unhappy at Celtic, I wasn't. And I certainly didn't want to go, and I had no idea. I mean, I'd just built a new house and everything, and anyway.
And I know that you're on record as saying that you didn't go to his funeral.
No, I didn't.
And in hindsight, do you regret that now? Are you quite glad you
weren't
a hypocrite?
No. The man ruined my life, basically. I mean, I was only 20 years of age and doing well at Celtic, scoring lots of goals, and you know, suddenly he shunts you away down to England for I don't know. The only thing I can think of is missing the chance in the European Cup final. I think that's, knowing him, that could have been
part of the reason.
Part of the reason. And so I don't know. That's why I just, you know, and I thought, I'm not going to, why should I go to his funeral and ruin my life?
So in terms of that now and in the present, do you keep in touch with the interest of the club? Do you still go to the games?
Still go to the games, aye.
And do you still see the John Clark and Jim Craig, all these guys that are still in the scene?
No, because John Clark's in the bills of the thing. I'm on the other side of the stand where we sit now. You know, Jim Craig does work for thing. You know, I see John Fallon, he's there, you know. He don't see Bertie because he's in the other stand as well. And Brendan Rodgers had been phenomenal for Celtic, you know, but what a little rat he is.
To put it mildly, it was disappointing the way it was done, wasn't it?
Oh.
I think we all knew he was going to go at the end of the season.
Well, you know,
with good grace.
Alec Gordon, the boy who wrote my book, Alex told me he would go at the end of the season. And I said, you've been wrong before, because I didn't want him to go.
No, Nene's did.
But what he did, you know, after spouting all this rubbish about he loves the Celtic and Celtic and this and Celtic and that, and then he just buggers off. I couldn't believe it.
Just get back a wee minute there, just to when you were leaving in 71, do you think Jock was under pressure with the quality state gang coming through? Now, you've got these young boys like Kerry and Lou McCarry and George Connolly. Do you think maybe that was part of the reason for moving you and Willie on? And because there's a tendency now to think that he did it too quickly.
Well, I think he did it. Well, I mean, the quality state gang were great players, but I mean, they never achieved anything we achieved. And he may very well have done it. That could have been a reason, I don't know. I'd never given that a thought.
Does he even, you know, but Willie Wallace as well, I always recall reading something that said that when it came to the 72 semi-final against Inter Milan, Celtic had 2 hours to pierce that Italian defence. Now, they didn't do it. And as we all know, it went to penalties and we get beat. Now, Dixie was inexperienced at that level.
Yeah.
Kenny was only a boy. Lou McCarry was still quite inexperienced.
Yeah.
And people have said, you know, if you had John Hughes and Willie Wallace to come on, with the amount of experience they had at that level, that could have been the difference between getting to another final.
It could have been, you know, but you never know, will you?
No.
Stephen,
no.
You know, well, it's all up in the air. I never even thought about that as a reason, and it could have been, but maybe he's done it a couple of years too early, you know. But you see, you know what they say about poor corrupting and absolute power. Now, Big Joe in Scotland had absolute power.
Overall?
Over everything.
And looking back at your career, and you've got loads to be proud of, John. You've got medals, you've got caps, great memories. Is there one particular game or one particular memory that you cherish?
Ugh, no, there's a lot. I mean, the Rangers game, the 2 penalties against Rangers is big, but the semi final against Leeds was big as well, because that was a Scotland England thing, and you know, but there were lots of games where, you know, Aberdeen scoring 5 goals against Aberdeen. You know, I mean, I loved it. You know, I mean, my time at Celtic Park was great. I mean, I loved the times. And
who was your pals in the team? I know that these were all pally, but did you have any close friends in the side at that point?
Well, Jim Brogan was my pal. And in our wee group, it was Jimmy and Bobby Lennox and Bobby Murdoch and, you know, there was 2 or 3 wee pockets, you know.
Yeah, that's only natural.
Aye, we get that anywhere, so. But as I say, Stephen, my time at Shield Bar was great. It was terrific. Never take the memories away, you know.
And you went into management very, very shortly for a short period at Stranraer. Did you not take to management?
It wasn't that I didn't take to it. On the way up to one of the games, I told the guy he wasn't playing. And when we got there, the board said he was playing.
So you're overruled and undermined?
So I said,
that's it.
Forget it. I mean, I'm not going to do that, you know what I mean? But Stranraer was a nice wee club, you know, and nice wee stadium, and did quite well there. But
and did you have a chance to go anywhere else in management, or did it just fizzle out?
No. But to me, you know, one of the guys, we came in after a game and it was a tight game and we lost. I was raging, you know. I came in and one of the players said, "How'd the Rangers got on?" I said, "How'd the Rangers got on?" I was going to wring his neck, you know. All that's involved, you know. They say it's not as bad now, but I'm sure it is.
It's still there underneath everything.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is, you know.
So, moving on to the Celtic now, are you optimistic with Neil Lennon? Are you quite happy about him?
I'm delighted he's back, yeah. Aye. Don't forget, he's done something that Brendan Rodgers hasn't done. The status to the last 16. And he's also just won a game at Easter Road that Brendan Rodgers didn't do. I think Neil's good tactically. And you know, he might not be as good a coach in coaching the young boys and things, I don't know, you know, but I think he's the best man Celtic could have got, you know.
Definitely.
And you know, right at this minute,
would you give him it long term?
I would, aye.
Because it's a catch 22 here, because a lot of people are looking for maybe a bigger name than Neil Lennon, and you know, somebody in the Brendan Rodgers vein. David Moyes' name's been mentioned, but
What's David Moyes done in the game?
Well, that's my argument as well, because it's a difficult one. You can bring in somebody like the Tony Mowbray thing still haunts me, because here was a guy that did a pedigree as a manager down in England and it seemed to do quite well, and yet when he came here it was a
job was too big for him.
Oh, it was a car crash.
Job was too big for him.
So but I don't want that. I would rather have a safe pair of hands, and for me at this moment in time, then Neil Lennon is it.
See, the other thing is, come the end of the season, it's going to be a big job ahead. You know, these loan players are going to be disappearing.
That's right.
And Boyata's going to go. And
you're right, there's a lot of contract as well.
Yeah. You know, the only thing he said, he's going to sign Lustig again. I don't agree with that.
I
think Lustig's been a good servant. He's done well for us, but I think he's passed his best.
In terms of the Celtic players at the moment, who excites you? Who's the guys in the team that you think makes you...
Who excites me? I like Callum McGregor.
What about the big boy, Buck? Do you see a wee bit of yourself in him? You're a big, strong man, he plays wide, he's got pace.
I think he needs a bit of work. There are a couple of times... against Hearts, where a ball was played through him and he would get under his feet, and you know, I still think he's got potential. He's got potential, but I don't know that he's got potential. Brendan Rodgers seemed to think he had potential as a striker. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a coach, you know. He's got pace and he can take people on, and if you've got that, then everybody's fair to you.
That's right.
You know, I know that. I know when I was playing, people used to talk about my pace. That worried them. You know, because I could run.
Yeah.
And you know, that worries defenders. If you've got pace, they're worried about it, you know. So he's definitely got, I'm sure Neil Lennon will be able to, you know, but he's £15 million, don't he?
I know. You know, like this, he's maybe our price range, unfortunately, which is a pity. So that brings us to the end, John. I'd just like to thank you very much for giving us your time. I'm delighted to say for everybody listening here that you're looking well.
Thank you very much.
I'm delighted to say that you're still going to the games, because I know that our generation, my dad's generation, revered the likes of you and Bobby and Bertie and Jinky. And when we were brought up as boys, you guys were legends even at that time. And it's great that you're still supporting the team.
The thing is, Stephen, you know, since I went to Celtic. I didn't have any boyhood heroes or anything like that, but I mean, a Celtic man since I went there, and you know, still am, and you know, I wouldn't stop going. And it was lovely to see Brendan Rodgers starting to make them play like a Celtic again.
Aye, they're attacking football.
When Ronnie Delia was there, I was on the verge of chucking it.
I know.
You know, because I used to go up on a Sunday morning, pick the paper up and read about what he was saying about the games, and I used to think to myself, what is this guy talking about? Mm. What game is he watching? And he wasn't getting the results, you know.
No.
I mean, any manager at Celtic will get results because they're Celtic,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he's just, he's so, I don't know. I was delighted when he left and Brendan came in, and I'm a fierce critic of the team,
mm-hmm.
but I really haven't criticised very much since Brendan Rodgers came, I've got to say.
No.
I think he did a fantastic job, and he's given the Celtic supporters pride again.
Mm.
They're proud to be Celtic supporters now, whereas with Delia it was
going through the motions, wasn't it?
That was terrible. You know,
anyway, that brings us to the end, John, so I'd just like to thank you for your time.
No bother, Stephen. I was delighted to do it. Always delighted to speak about the Celtic, and the great thing is that once you've played for the Celtic, you'll always be Celtic.
Good man, John. Cheers.
Don't care if the hero gets his